Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hello and welcome back to the WTF1 podcast with your usual host, myself, Hayden Guys, and James Coker. And we're going to kick things off with the biggest news of the week that has dropped between the last podcast we did, which is, of course, the Brazilian review, and it is that we have got one of our remaining seats signed, sealed, and delivered. Gabriel Bortoleto will be driving for Stake for 2025, which means Bottas and Zhou are at least out of the Stake team, and it's unlikely that they're going to be driving for RB next season. What do we think about this signing? Bortoleto, is it a right choice?
Gabriel Bortoleto, first of all, let me be the first to say, bem-vindo to Formula One. Very exciting.
You have to flex the many languages that you have researched before this podcast.
Exactly. I will say that I know you got a prediction right for the Sao Paulo Grand Prix mm-hmm. when you said Max Verstappen was going to win the race regardless of where he started. And qualifying, and he sure did. I have been saying that that seat was going to go for Bortoleto for quite some time.
Yeah.
And it did. But I also know that that wasn't a hot take. I feel like a lot of people thought that. So I think it's a good signing. I think it's hard because there most of the drivers on the F1 grid in its current form, seem like pretty decent people. And for the most part, most of them are pretty likable. And when you broad strokes, you think to yourself, the Formula One grid needs to change. It feels a little stale. We need to get some new blood in there. But then when you start thinking about individual drivers, you're like, what about Checo? And you're like, oh, I kind of like Checo. What about Zhou Guan Yu? Oh, I kind of like Zhou Guan Yu. What about Valtteri Bottas? It's like once you focus on the actual person, it's hard to say who should go and who should get to stay. Broad strokes, I think it's a good move, both for Stakes / Kicks / Sauber / Audi. Mm-hmm. And it's good for Formula One because I feel like Formula One was desperate for an injection of youth and young blood because I don't know how you feel, but I felt like the grid was starting to feel a little too old for its own good.
Yeah, I don't know. It's always difficult, isn't it? Because especially when we had an influx of young drivers coming in around 2017, 2018, 2019, of course, with the three of them coming in. And it makes it more difficult than once those guys have come in, and especially some really good talents of Charles Leclerc, for example, and Albon, Russell, and Lando. Then you know those drivers aren't going to be going anywhere anytime soon and going to be staying there for a while. Yeah, I think in terms of this signing, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. I think he's had a really good junior career, won F3 last season, and is now competing for the F2 championship going into the end of this season. I think there's only one round left at Abu Dhabi, but there might be another one, maybe at Qatar or Vegas, but I really don't think there is. I think it's just the one left in Abu Dhabi. So he has a chance to win that as well.
He has two wins, five podiums.
an amazing race in Monza as well. He qualified at the back. He had, I think there was some sort of issue in qualifying. Started at the back, split the point in the sprint race for in Monza. Literally finished at exactly the same time as Dennis Hauger, and
the pride of Norway.
Yeah, and they both got 0.5 of a point for finishing exactly the same place, and then did a last to first in F2 in Monza as well. So he's had a really strong season, memorable results, and to have a Brazilian back on the grid is huge for Formula One, I feel like. You know, first Brazilian since Felipe Massa, I believe. So that was last in 2016, I believe, was his last season. Maybe 2017. 2017, last season for Massa. Yeah. So it's been a while since we've had a Brazilian on the grid. And yeah, the reason I say it would be interesting to see how it goes, because sometimes recency bias, like, I think he's had a really good second half of the F2 season, and then has started to really do the rounds and talk and amongst the paddock. But with any junior driver, you know, they can impress so well in junior categories, but when they get to Formula One, it struggles, especially going to a team like Stake in the form that they are in at the moment. You know, worst team on the grid currently in performance wise.
Yeah,
struggling to make improvements up the field, and sometimes that isn't good for a driver, because you look at someone like Russell. If he didn't have Mercedes backing, went to Williams as it was, might have potentially struggled to then move further up the grid, because he was only really fighting against Robert Kubica, then Nicholas Latifi. So we're interested to see how that goes. It's a multi-year deal, so looking to move into the Audi program as well when that makes the name change, alongside Nico Hülkenberg. And yeah, it's just crazy how we're getting such young drivers being injected into the sport. We've got, how many rookies is that now coming in? Maybe five? Antonelli, Behrmann, Doohan, Bortoleto.
I mean, technically Lawson, because it'll be his first full season.
Lawson, yeah, first full season. And is there one more? I feel like that might be it. But I also feel like there's one more I'm missing. Not too sure.
Doohan, Behrmann.
Antonelli.
Bortoleto, Antonelli.
Lawson, if you can include him as well.
Yeah, that's five. That's a lot. Yeah. That's a lot of...
Which I didn't think that we'd have that many jumping in that soon after, like, 2019.
I think it's good because it gets fans excited, in my opinion.
Yeah, a lot of trust in the young drivers, and I think it's good that they are showing that, because we always say, oh, there should be more teams on the grid, because we're letting a lot of young talent go by the wayside and not ever really progressing to Formula One. Look at Theo Porcher.
Yeah.
I think he's the biggest example.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many drivers who, like, really excel in F2, are F2 champions, or did very well in the latter series, who it's just like, you know, the timing doesn't work out for them. Like Theo Porcher.
Yeah.
Like Robert Schwartzman in the Ferrari Academy. It became very clear that he was never really going to get an opportunity at Ferrari, at least, in the near future. So, you know, they just announced that he was going to Prema.
Yes.
And IndyCar
will
be teaming with Callum Mylott. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That'll be exciting IndyCar team to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting to see Prema in and those guys. Yeah, for sure.
You got Drugovic, who may never end up driving in a Formula One car, you know, full time. Like, it's just there's just such an incredible bottleneck, and there's so many drivers who are qualified to at the very least get a shot.
Yeah.
And I'm very sad to see a lot of these personalities and these drivers leave the Formula One grid, but I'm also excited to get some variety and to have some younger drivers get an opportunity to prove themselves.
Yeah, certainly. What does this mean for those two drivers currently in the seat? Of course, Bottas and Zhou. It's both been announced that, of course, neither of them will be staying with the team. And I assume that also means in a reserve role aspect as well, going forward with the Audi plan. Bottas, there's kind of hints that he is going to still remain in the paddock with Mercedes as a reserve driver. That's the sort of rumor mill that is spinning up at the moment. But I also know that he said that he would like to do IndyCar. His goal is to remain racing, and IndyCar would be his backup plan. I remember he said in an interview.
You know, I think it's so interesting.
Maybe.
I think Valtteri Bottas would be perfect for IndyCar or NASCAR. I feel like American audiences love him.
Yeah.
And so I think he would destroy an IndyCar. I think it's hard for him to find an IndyCar seat this year because for the most part, I think now. all of the teams have sort of like set their driver lineups.
Yeah.
I know one of the bigger teams that was still waiting to announce their third seat, Chip Ganassi, announced that Kiffin Simpson was going to stay on and be the third driver to pair with Alex Palou and Scott Dixon. So there's just like really not, there's really nowhere to go in IndyCar this season.
Yeah.
So it makes sense at least as a bridge right now for the next year, but to like stay with a team in a reserve role. And it's also kind of smart when you think about it. If you're an experienced Formula One driver who's lost your seat and there's going to be five some odd rookies on the Formula One grid next year, there is a good chance that one of these rookies are not going to be able to assimilate to Formula One, whether it's like the adjustments to the car or just the adjustments to the culture. And they're going to need an experienced driver who is ready, waiting in the wings to come right in and fill that seat.
Yeah, I think looking around the teams, obviously Mercedes have got Kimi Antonelli coming in for next season. I think they put a lot of trust in Kimi, so I don't think it's necessarily as much of, we're putting Bottas here as a backup plan. Because they could probably easily go and get Bottas if they wanted him, regardless of what he was doing. If Mercedes come knocking and said, we want to put you in F1 back in the Mercedes car, take over from Kimi, they'd probably be like, okay, cool, I'll stop whatever I'm doing and I'll come join you. Or they'd buy him out of whatever contract that he has. I can't imagine it would be expensive to buy him out of the contract out of something that's, you know, not driving for another Formula One team.
Yeah, because so, you're like, what? You're an insurance policy as a reserve driver. And you're also there for testing as well, of course. And then in some cases, for some drivers, you're there for marketing.
Yeah. Or Bottas was a really fundamental part of that Mercedes team for making it so good and so dominant, because it wasn't just from 2014 they had a massive advantage and then were destroying from then onwards until 2021. No, there were times that, you know, Ferrari caught up 2017, 2018, and then, you know, Mercedes would be able to develop the car and then become the faster car once again and be by a considerable margin over the Ferrari to easily win both the 17 and 18 championships. And Bottas was a part of that team then. So maybe Bottas is a good personality and a good driver, experienced head to be in that team to help with the development program with someone like George Russell, who, you know, he's been in Formula One since 2019, but still relatively inexperienced when you compare him to the likes of, you know, Lewis Hamilton, who's on his way out, and Kimi Antonelli, of course, has only done a few practice sessions in Formula One so far. So having someone like Bottas there too could help potentially with the direction of where to take the car, especially as Mercedes, you know, are on the back foot quite massively and need to try and find their way back to the front.
I also think what's so interesting to me about Valtteri Bottas is the fact that he is one of the most overlooked talents in recent Formula One history. And I think part of that is the reason that he has had to spend the majority of his career in the shadow of Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah.
But you look at Valtteri Bottas on paper, such an incredibly impressive record. Yeah. Out of 243 race starts, he's had 10 wins and 67 podiums. That means he has been on the podium a quarter of the time he enters a race. And on top of that, he got pole position a tenth of those times. He has 20 poles in his career. Absolutely unbelievable. And if it wasn't, and yes, you can make the argument, okay, he was in a Mercedes during the turbo hybrid era where they dominated and they had the right car and the most dominant car. But still, regardless of that fact, the numbers don't lie. Like, he is an incredibly accomplished driver who might have been more accomplished if he wasn't designated as the number two guy on a top team.
Yeah, I think, I don't ever think Valtteri Bottas world champion material, but I think, you know, what a great driver, a brilliant driver, someone you want in your team. And one thing that was really good about him is he's a really good qualifier. Racing and wheel to wheel, lacking, you know, overtaking Bottas was sort of known amongst the paddock and amongst the drivers as like easy. I think I remember Daniel Ricciardo won an award for overtake of the year on Valtteri Bottas, and Max Verstappen was just like, oh, it's on Bottas, so does it really count? I think he's sort of known as one of the not as good racecraft compared to some of the other drivers on the grid, but qualifying insane. And obviously you look at someone like Sergio Perez in the Red Bull, now had a dominant car in 23, but also struggled for a lot of races in the mix and not up at the front, backing up podiums race after race. Why? Because qualifying was always the thing that would let Checo down. If he had a good qualifying, the car was there ready just to sort of keep in a good windows because it was really good at race pace and would keep him easily in the fight for a podium if he qualified into Q3 and was up there in the top five every single race, at least in qualifying. That's what Bottas did. Bottas would even fight for poles and take them away from Lewis Hamilton because he was a very, very good qualifier. He was just inconsistent in terms of race pace and would make those small little errors that Lewis Hamilton wouldn't. And that's how Lewis would beat him over a season. So great.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people don't realize that Valtteri Bottas is in the top 10 for most podiums ever in Formula One history.
Yeah.
With 67 podiums, he's number 10 on the list of the top 10. But the other names on that list, number 9, Rubens Barrichello. Mm-hmm. Number 8, Ayrton Senna. 7, Kimi Raikkonen, Fernando Alonso, Alain Prost, Max Verstappen, Sebastian Vettel, Michael Schumacher, Lewis Hamilton. Like, he is on a list with the greatest drivers in Formula One history. So, if this is the last, if these next three race weekends is the last that we see Valtteri Bottas in a Formula One car, like, he should be very proud of the career he's had in F1.
Yeah, certainly so. And to be up there, it's funny that Rubens Barrichello is on there as well, because I always compared. And the similarities between Bottas and Barrichello, they were both very much number two drivers compared to
because he was second banana to Schumacher, right?
Exactly, yeah. And a very important part of those Ferrari Schumacher days and those championships that they won together. You start having two teammates that fight with each other, and if there's a competitive car alongside, then you open that door for another driver to kind of step in. Maybe if Bottas was better with racecraft, who knows, he could have done what Checo did for Max in that 21 season and would defend from Lewis Hamilton, especially in Abu Dhabi, of course. But Bottas would always sort of struggle with that, as I said. But yeah, I think a brilliant career. I wouldn't say for Bottas, like, unlike a Hülkenberg, I wish he just had this opportunity, right? He had that opportunity. No, he had the opportunity. It didn't go the way of winning the world championship, but he still took it by getting race wins and putting himself, in Formula One history books that, he's won races, and I'm pretty sure that more people have been to space than have won a Formula One race. So I think that's an incredible achievement.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The only thing that is a shame in the case of Valtteri is the fact that he did not win Monaco. Out of the 10 races that he did win, it was Russia, Austria, Abu Dhabi, Australia, Azerbaijan, Japan, COTA, Austria, Russia, Turkey. If he had won Monaco, he'd be perfect. He'd be a perfect candidate to go after that triple crown because he seems like a guy that genuinely wants to drive an IndyCar, not just to drive in the 500.
Yeah.
I think he'd like the culture. I think he'd like the vibe, the fans, hanging out in an RV, driving around the country, going from race to race,
get on some barbecues.
Yeah. But winning the Indy 500 would be a cherry on top of the adventure, where you have someone like Alonso who wants to go to run the Indy 500 because he wants to win the triple crown.
Yeah.
Which is so interesting because, like, you look at Bottas's career. He was at Williams, and then was able to go to Mercedes and was in a good car, and you know, was like a rear gunner for Lewis Hamilton. But then you look at Zhou Guan Yu. Zhou Guan Yu was only on one team in Formula One, Alfa Romeo. Then of course, like Steak/Kick/Sauber. On paper, not as an impressive career, like 65 race starts, two fastest laps, best finish was P8, best quali was P5. But he was never really in a car where he got an opportunity to compete and never really got an opportunity to show. And like Zhou Guan Yu, and when he was driving the ladder series, like was very successful. He was the F3, he won the F3 Asian Championship in 2021, mm-hmm. With 4 wins, 5 poles, 11 podiums. So like he is capable of being very competitive among a field of very accomplished and talented drivers. And it's one of those stories where it happens all the time in Formula One, where drivers don't really get an opportunity to prove themselves because they're already starting on the back foot and have such a disadvantage.
Yeah, and this is what I was saying about like Bortoleto earlier on. If when they moved to Audi as well, they're still struggling at the back. I know that he was tied to McLaren, but are those ties gone now that he's gone to this team? I'm not too sure. But, you know, Zhou didn't have any backing from any other teams that he was tied to, like a George Russell at Williams. So, you know, you're running around at the back. And you know, I feel really sorry for the situation because he had such a strong debut, scored points in his debut, which not many Formula One drivers have done. But that team's always been at the back for the majority of the time that he's been there. And not just at the back, it's also the fact that he has had this season a worse car than Bottas. And that's not just like speculation. That's not just me trying to defend someone that, you know, I've fondly been able to play the F1 game with and hang out. And I think that he is, like, you know, a really nice, incredible, humble guy.
Right.
It's fact that those two cars have not been the same. It was like commentary, I think it was in Singapore, that Martin Brundle said Singapore was the first time since like maybe China. It was that those two were running the same spec car, but then Bottas got more upgrades straight after that. So, you know, for 90% of the season, he's been running a worse car than what Bottas has done. So therefore, you know, the only representation you have to be compared to at a team like Stake, where you're running around at the back, is your teammate. You don't even have a fair opportunity because you're running completely different cars. And I think I wish that it was more sort of public knowledge when teams were doing something like that, because I also feel like Logan Sargeant was also put under that scrutiny to compare to Alex Albon, and both of them were running different cars for pretty much the whole time that they were teammates as well. Albon would always get the upgrades first. Logan would get them a little bit later. And only a few times they'd overlap and be on the same sort of performance terms. But that certainly has been the case for Zhou. And I hope that a lot of people within the paddock can see that. And if there is an opportunity at some point later down the line, that he has an opportunity to get that, rather than is just disregarded because they look at this 2024 season. Because I think recency bias is a very, very strong thing in Formula One. People have short memories and only think of what has happened in the last few months, rather than, you know, qualifying. I think Bottas was better, but we've already spoken earlier that Bottas is really, really strong qualifying. But I think in race pace over the course of his career, at least when the cars were even, Zhou would be on par with Bottas. And I don't know about last season's championship or 22, but at the moment, you know, he's even still ahead of Bottas in the standings because of that early P11 result that I think he got in Bahrain. But yeah, he said in his statement that he's looking to see other options within the paddock. So sounding like a reserve role as well, with potential teams, and trying to see what doors can open up. And hopefully for him, he remains in the Formula One paddock and hopefully as well also gets an opportunity at some point later down the line.
I agree. I hope he gets another chance. I hope he gets a chance to compete in a car where he can actually show his full potential, or is able to tap into at least part of his full potential as a driver. But I will say, and I know you're friends with him, so I don't want to get too into this, but like, he's in a unique position where Zhou Guanyu doesn't need to drive in Formula One. Like, mm-hmm. he is from a well-off family in China. He doesn't need to continue to pursue a career. He does it because he loves it. Mm-hmm. And in that, he does not need to exclusively drive in Formula One. He has the luxury to pursue whatever series he wants. If, you know, he wanted to drive in WEC, which some drivers consider to be the purest form of racing, endurance racing, he could do that. And a lot of drivers end up not driving a WEC because it doesn't pay as well as some of the other series. So like, I do also do think it's like an interesting opportunity for him, because Zhou Guanyu could probably, let's say he doesn't want to take a reserve role at a Formula One team, or he does take a reserve role at a Formula One team while also driving for a competitive WEC team. Like, mm-hmm. it's the best of both worlds. He's able to like keep a foot in on the Formula One grid and also continue to hone his skills and stay in form, like driving WEC. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not unusual, is it, that we see reserve Formula One drivers competing in WEC as well. So,
potentially. Stoffel Van Dorn, good example.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully, you know, there is obviously that opportunity somewhere else in the paddock, but of course, continuing racing as well. And hey, he's got his modeling career too. So, he's a fashionista. So,
he's just so stylish.
He is.
I actually think Formula E would be a good fit for him if he'd be interested. I don't know if he is. I believe they have a double header in China this year, which like would be very cool for him to have a home race there. But like, I think when it comes to brand, like Zhou Guanyu's brand and the brand of Formula E, I think it'd be a good fit. And I think that's something that Formula E is missing right now, because mm-hmm. Formula E, I think, is a great series. I feel like it has a lot of really talented drivers. The racing is really good, but I think it has not given itself the opportunity to take a driver who already has a following from another series.
Yeah.
And let them follow that driver into Formula E. Like, I know Pierre Gasly did like a one-off thing in a race like years ago. And Nelson Piquet Jr. also was the Formula E season one champion.
Yeah.
But like, I think about like if a driver like Checo Perez decided to go drive for a Formula E team, or Yuki Tsunoda, or Zhou Guanyu, or Valtteri Bottas. I feel like a lot of Formula One fans that followed any of those drivers during their F1 career would start following Formula E just for that reason.
Yeah, I think with Formula E as well, obviously being electric powered, and I think China is one of like the leading countries, I believe, mm-hmm. for electric vehicles. So there is like obviously a bit of a link there, so to speak. So yeah, I mean, I think we spoke about it before when we were talking about drivers potentially not getting a seat. Where would they go? And we alluded to, yeah, Bottas would be a good fit for IndyCar. Who would go to Formula E? I could see more Checo going to Formula E, and I could see Zhou with that link in terms of, you know, China being one of the bigger countries for electric vehicles, being a link there as well. But you know, just because there's a link between someone's nationality and a statistic like that doesn't mean that the driver wants to go and drive electric vehicles. You know,
no, that's fair.
He could also be. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't asked him that question because, you know, when I'm playing the F1 game, when he's still, you know, got a seat at the moment it hasn't been confirmed that he's not driving next season, I'm not really going to be, oh yeah, so potentially would you like to do Formula E next season? He's like, no mate, I want to do F1, obviously. So that question hasn't even crossed my mind.
Everybody wants to be an F1. I get
exactly.
It's like asking like a football player who's playing in England, like, hey, you want to go to League One? And they're like, no. You want to play in the National League? No, I want to play in the Premier League. Everybody wants to be on the big stage, right? Exactly. They want to be like competing against the best of the best.
Exactly. Let's see what happens with that one. See if he is picked up by anyone as a reserve, and hopefully he carries on in some sort of aspect, and maybe even gets an opportunity later down the line. But that only leaves one seat remaining now on the F1 grid. That is the Red Bull family. I know we talk about this a lot. And
we are family.
We are. Well, they're a disruptive family at the moment.
I got all my Red Bulls with me.
Lawson and Checo swearing at each other, mugging each other off all the time. Yuki's just chilling, being like, so what's happening with me then, guys? Like, where am I going to go? And obviously Max is just winning and doing an incredible job at Red Bull. We talk about it a lot. But I think the weirdest thing for me over this triple header is how confident Sergio Perez is that he is driving again next season. Now, a lot of the time, the drivers was kind of like dismiss those questions and be like, you know, nothing's been decided yet. We'll see what happens. You know, there's right. a lot of talks going on behind the scenes. Obviously, he has a contract in place till the end of 2025, I believe. And but the way he answered in Mexico when they asked, is this your last Mexican Grand Prix? He said, no, I will be here next season. My goal is, as always, to win my home Grand Prix. But it was said in such a confident way that just makes me think that he knows his contract is so tightly wrapped. Now, he's been in a position before where he was dropped by Racing Point when they turned into Aston Martin, and he was dropped for Sebastian Vettel. So when he already had a contract for the next season, he was dropped by that team. So potentially him and his team, his lawyers, whatever, learned from that mistake what was maybe a breach in the contract to get out of it. And they have learned to keep that so watertight that it is very, very difficult for Red Bull. Now, I know that Horner talks about a lot of the time that, oh, we have an option to end the contract if he's a certain amount of points behind Verstappen, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's been breached and he still is a part of the team. So either he has some dirt on the team and they have to keep him, or...
That's what I was about to ask. Does he know where the bodies are buried?
Yeah, or he's... He started all the emails. He leaked all the emails back at the start of the season. That was Sergio Perez. Who knows? But, like, you think about it as well in terms of the... Think of Red Bull. Red Bull is a very much a marketing. You know, Red Bull love to put themselves out there as much as possible. What do Formula F1 fans, and even fans of Formula 1, what do they care about most every season? It's the Drivers' Championship. You wouldn't go to someone who isn't a Formula One fan, other than someone who lived maybe in Italy, and talk about the Constructors' Championship, be like, oh, there's a great battle between McLaren and Ferrari. And they'd be like, okay, cool. But if you were like, there's a huge championship battle, say Lando was closer, oh, you know, it's going down to the final race, Lando versus Max for the championship, they'd be like, okay, I want to watch this race. Not for a race for a battle of the Constructors. So Red Bull, in that sort of marketing brain, think, okay, cool, well, we've got Max Verstappen, we can put all our eggs in that basket, and he will go win the Drivers' Championship. And we'll fight for it. And that will give us the best opportunity. And we'll get eyes on Red Bull because of that. Don't need to worry about the constructors. They'll lose the money, but Checo's sponsors can potentially reimburse, maybe not all of it, but at least some of it. And Red Bull's a massive company that doesn't necessarily need the money either. But also on top of that, if you finish third in the championship, right, in the constructors, but your driver wins the driver's championship, that is a huge benefit because of the amount of wind tunnel hours that you will receive compared to the two teams that finish above you in the constructors. McLaren and Ferrari will have less wind tunnel time and time to develop their car compared to Red Bull if they finish third in the championship. So it could even be beneficiary for Red Bull to have Sergio Perez in that car, to be losing the points, to be finishing third in the constructors' championship, but still be able to have that faith in Max Verstappen to win the drivers. And then we'll be able to develop the car next season to make sure that Max has a car to still again fight for the championship. That's my conspiracy theory of how this seat is potentially could stay Sergio Perez's for 2025.
It's to give Max more wind tunnel time, or give Red Bull more
give
wind
Red Bull
tunnel time.
More wind tunnel time. Max Verstappen will have a chance.
So
to
it's just
the
Red Bull is prioritizing drivers' championship, and they don't really care about constructors.
Yeah, because if you're already a company that has so much money, why would you?
Yeah.
Like, you don't need the money for winning the constructors, and there's more reason to finish lower down the standings because you get more development time, which then would remain Yuki and Lawson in those seats. Which I don't know which one. I think who's already announced? Yuki's already announced, right, for 2025. Lawson's the one who isn't.
Yeah, he has they picked up like his 1 year team option for 2025. Yeah.
So Lawson isn't, but maybe that's just not signed because they're still trying to work on that option for the Red Bull seat, and I'm completely wrong about my speculation, or they're just waiting to see how this season goes in RB, and then they're signing for the next season.
I don't know if you've heard this. There's like a conspiracy theory going around, and I don't think it's legit, because I don't think Carlos Sainz mm-hmm. and Max Verstappen could coexist on the nope. same team.
Nope.
Just because of like the tension between them and their families and whatnot. But there's a rumor that the way things are shaking out at Red Bull, Checo would lose his seat. They'd bring in Carlos Sainz and Franco Colapinto would then slot into that open seat at Williams.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I believe it's rumored that there's a clause in Sainz's contract that if a bigger team comes knocking, then Carlos Sainz can go rocking and go to that team. So,
it's when the house comes a knocking, don't usually, bother.
Yeah,
when
the boat's rocking, don't go knocking or something like that. Yeah,
when the house comes a rocking, don't bother knocking. Clause in the contract.
Yeah, but that's just because I think speculation from Horner going into the Williams tents in Brazil. But that could also be him querying about Colapinto and trying to get him in that, you know, second RB seat if Perez is dropped and Lawson or Sonoda's moved up and there's a seat still remaining there. So I think everything is all relying on how watertight really is Sergio Perez's contract for 2025. If it's not and they get rid of him at the end of the season, then there will be some move around. And I just don't know why, but I can't see Yuki Tsunoda going to Red Bull just because to feel like they don't want him there. He's too hot-headed for them. They don't want him in Red Bull.
I think it's not necessarily that he's too hot-headed. It's that they don't think like they can. It's a good culture fit to have two hot-headed drivers because Max already is hot-headed.
But I say Liam has shown that as well over the course of the few races he's done. He's been very aggressive with everybody that he's been fighting. He's done a good job. He hasn't really come together in a race-ending way. Had that little clumsy trip over of Colapinto in Mexico, but it's just Colapinto went up the inside. Lawson miscalculated how close he could be behind him, and they just came together slightly, but it wasn't like a massive, huge shunt from being overly aggressive. So,
yeah.
I don't know. What do you think? Do you think Checo will stay? Do you think he'll go?
I think he will. I think he's going to leave. I think Lawson's going to get slotted in.
I thought you were just going to leave it as I think he will. I was just like, because I said, do you think he'll stay? Do you think he'll go? And you were just like, I think he will. As a sort of very smart way to sit on the fence that whatever happens, you'd be like, I said it.
I think he will do something. No, I do think Checo is at the end. I think Checo will probably finish the season.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lawson will slot in for next year in that second Red Bull seat. And I don't know who we'll see. In RB. I have no idea. Yuki will stay there for one season as well as, I don't know, Isaac Hedger?
Yeah, I suppose that's the other option. You know, he's currently fighting for the F2 championship. If he wins, then he can't stay in F2. He has to be moved on. I know a lot of the time they do move on drivers to Super Formula. I guess that's some sort of easier relationship that they can work out with the deal that they have with Honda in terms of the engine partnership, and they can move drivers over to Super Formula. Obviously, Owasa is also Japanese as well, so he's back in his home country and can go racing still and no longer in F2. So, Hadjar will either, I assume, go into RB or go to Super Formula if he wins the championship. If he doesn't, then he can do another season of F2, if that's what they want him to do as well. But Colapinto, you know, again, Formula 1 recency bias, has been doing really well over the last few races, and he's hot topic on everybody's minds. And everyone's like, oh, well, he deserves a seat. He's been doing so amazing. And no one wants to get rid of him as well because he's a really nice guy, charismatic. There's a lot of Argentinian following. And it's really increasing Formula One once again in Argentina to the point that now people are speculating, should we have a race in Argentina again? So Colapinto back on the grid, I think, would be a shame if he wasn't back on the grid. But we just don't have enough seats. And it comes back to what we said earlier on this season, James. Teams need to have three cars and they need to make sure they have an under 25 driver in each of those cars guaranteed.
I would love that. That's what would make the sprint races relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Is like that's when the younger drivers get an opportunity to show themselves.
Yeah. And more seats, more drivers.
12 teams. Give us 12 teams.
It still won't
people.
Be enough. It still won't be enough. We'll still be like, there's so many drivers that we're like, this person deserves a shot in Formula One. But, you know, at least it's better than what we have now, that 20.
I think you need 12 teams. Mm-hmm. Unless you want to open it up, you want to get crazy, and you want to open it up to 15 teams and you bring back pre-qualifying.
Pre-qualifying. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of teams under that 107% rule as well. They don't even get, kind of like the IndyCar, the bump, where some people don't make it to the race weekend. That must be heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking.
You rock up every race all season, you don't even make it to the actual qualifying once. Can you imagine there's one team that does that?
It'd be really hard. I mean, you go back and you look at teams in the 70s, 80s, 90s, a lot of them never end up racing in most of the Grand Prix.
They just showed up for a good time, jumped on the parties, and had a good time.
They're for a good time, not a long time.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
We also really quickly need to talk on Formula E preseason testing is currently happening right now at the Jarama circuit, which is...
Yes, it changed, didn't it? Because they were going to do it in Valencia. But then Valencia unfortunately had freakish flooding. Weather.
Yeah, so they've had like really terrible floods in Valencia, and Formula E preseason testing was moved to the, I believe it's pronounced the Jarama circuit, which is outside of Madrid. That most of the people that were signed up to do the preseason testing are also participating. I know Sophia Flörsch, who was supposed
doing
to
day, aren't they?
They're doing like an all women's test, but Sophia Flörsch was supposed to drive with Nissan, but due to a scheduling conflict, she can no longer do it.
Yeah, she's also doing an Indy Next, isn't she, Sophia Flörsch? I think she's doing an Indy Next test drive.
I believe
as well.
So. Yeah.
Which I'd love to see her and Jamie Chadwick both in. I know we've got off topic here from Formula E.
I would love that too.
But I'd love to see them too, because there was always a kind of unspoken rivalry between the two of them and their development towards Formula One, because Jamie Chadwick went down the W Series route and Sophia Flörsch was very against the all woman series and the segregation.
Yeah, she's always been against it.
So it will be interesting. I don't think there's much of a rivalry between the two of them. There might have been just comments here or there from Sophia Flörsch about Jamie obviously partaking in the W Series, because obviously she was so against it. But it's always been like more of a fan base being like, well, I think this one's better, but no, I think this one's going to be our best chance of Formula One. So it'll be interesting, both of them in an IndyCar grid going up against each other. It'll be quite interesting, but also great opportunity for them all in Formula E too.
I think that'd be awesome. I know Jamie Chadwick had an IndyCar test with Andretti in September, and apparently it was very impressive. And Jamie Chadwick is in this all-women's Formula E test driver lineup, driving with Jaguar TCS Racing. Some of the other notable names, Marta Garcia is driving with Tagoya Porsche. Sophia Flörsch was supposed to drive with Nissan, but couldn't now when they moved due to scheduling conflict. But Abby Pulling is driving with Nissan. Chloe Chambers is driving with Andretti. Bianca Bustamante, of course, is driving with Neo McLaren, which makes sense because that's the team that represents her in F1 Academy. Kerry Schreiner is driving for Maserati MSG Racing. So, like, I think it's great. I think it's great that Formula E is doing this. I hope that down the road it opens the door to have a female driver in Formula E. Like, I think Jamie Chadwick in Indy Next has shown that, and Sophia Flörsch in F3 have shown that, like, women can compete with men 100%. Yep. Like, motorsport is not a sport that needs to be segregated by gender. But what we really need is just more women and young girls starting at a very young age in the kart, in karting, and in the other ladder series, so that they're able to develop like at the same time and at the same rate as the men in the sport.
Yeah, and that's what I think is the great thing about F1 Academy. Now, mm-hmm. I have the opinion that the current crop of drivers, at least most of them, aren't good enough to get to Formula 1 and potentially even be in F3 and F2, but that's mm-hmm. not what it's necessarily there for at the moment. I know everyone sort of drums this bandwagon being like, oh, F1 Academy, like, obviously it's more toxic on Twitter, just being like, oh, they're not good enough, like, what's the point of this series? And it's to inspire a new generation. I think there is, because
yeah.
there's this whole, if you see it, you can do it. And at the moment, you could never see it because there was no one in those positions. Obviously, we're getting it now with, as we say, Jamie Chadwick doing tests with IndyCar and hopefully getting on the grid there. Sophia Flores being in Formula 3 and, you know, scoring the first point, I think, last season or this season and doing a fantastic job there. But it's to inspire, you know, 20 years' time that we have a lot more taking part. At the moment, if you take the pool of go-karting and you're picking a driver, you know, one out of, I'd say 1,000, but maybe it's more than that. Boys mm-hmm. that are taking part in go-karting will make it to Formula 1. But you have that pool of 1,000 boys. Whereas you yeah. have girls taking part, it could be, we go to a certain go-karting track or a series and it's 10. And the chances of one of those 10 making it all the way to Formula 1 is incredibly, incredibly low. But if you yeah. increase that pool size by inspiring a generation by doing something like F1 Academy, then that pool is going to get bigger and there's a bigger chance of finding talent. Because, you know, motorsport isn't also about being the most talented. It's also having the backing and having the financial. There's so many drivers who would be in karting that are better than Lewis Hamilton, Max Verstappen and Michael Schumacher and all those greats of Formula 1. But they never had the funding. They never had the backing to pursue the career all the way to the top. And, you know, think about that for a smaller pool of young girls who will never make it to the top because they don't have those luxuries. But also, you know, there's such a small, you know, pool of them to choose from. So yeah, it's good to see they're getting this opportunity. And for some of them, F1 Academy, I think, has a rule that you can only partake in two seasons, then you have to move on. Abby Pullins, mm-hmm. you know, most likely going to win this championship. So she'll yep. be moving on to Freca for next season, like Marta Garcia has done. But there's a lot of them, like Bianca Bustamante and Chloe Chambers, that will be out of a drive next season, and this will be mm-hmm. a good opportunity to showcase their talents to a Formula E team that maybe there's a full-time drive there or another junior category sees them in that test and goes, oh, that's actually really impressive. We'll pick them up for next season.
Yeah. It's interesting that you bring up that point of, like, there are so many drivers who are, like, really talented and qualified, but because they don't have the right connections and the right backing, they are never able to really make a career or make it to Formula One. A good example of that, and we should talk about this at length in a different episode, is the Irish driver Tommy Byrne from the 1980s. And I think I talked to you about this, about a documentary that I watched a few weeks ago, Crash and Burn, that came out in 2016 about the Irish driver Tommy Byrne. It's such a fascinating story because he was coming up through the ranks in the ladder series with the likes of Ayrton Senna and Martin Brundle, and was, like, at times, like, just as good, if not beating Ayrton Senna, who some people consider to be the greatest Formula One driver of all time. He was the British Formula 3 champion in 1982, was a champion in a number of other ladder series leading up to that, but he was a poor kid from Ireland who wasn't very polished, didn't fully understand the politics of motorsport and what it took to get to the, like, biggest stage, which is Formula One, and didn't realize at the time that he needed to be mindful of the politics and how he needs to curry favor around the people around him to make sure that he gets in the seat on top of being able to perform on the track. There's, like, a really fascinating story that Tommy Byrne talked about where, like, he tested for McLaren in the early 80s, on top of, on the heels of his, like, success, like, being a Formula 3 champion. And at the time, he tested in a McLaren and was faster than the two drivers who were currently on the team, one of which was Niki Lauda. Like, he was pulling faster times with them, but his personality was so abrasive and so unpolished that Ron Dennis wanted nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
There's this story that Tommy Byrne talks about in the documentary where he went to McLaren after it was either before or after the test that he did. And he's in Ron Dennis's office talking to him. And Tommy Byrne is just like point blank says, "Hey, do you think McLaren can help support my career in these lower series so I can continue to drive?" And Ron Dennis says, "Oh, I'm sorry. I think all of our money's tied up in R&D. And Tommy Byrne says, "What's that? Like, what's R&D?
Who is R&D?
who is this R&D?
Robert Downey Jr.'s Formula One career.
But it's just like, you know, and it's not just in sports, but it's also in the arts and in music. Like, unless you have powerful people with deep pockets invested in your success, often it's very, very hard to continue to progress.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly so. And we'll need to watch that documentary. Maybe we'll talk about that next week, because we've got a break week coming up. We got 2 weeks break before we get into our final triple header, which will be Vegas, Qatar, and Abu Dhabi, which will wrap up the season. And, of course, that exciting Constructors' Championship battle now, because the main one's gone. What would you like to say, sir?
One more thing before, because I feel like you're in wrapping up mode right now, because yes. You probably either need to go pee or take a shit or something like that. But we briefly need to mention the WEC championship, which just ended last weekend with the 8 hours at Bahrain. Just want to congratulate Porsche Penske Motorsport, Kevin Estre, Andre Lotterer, Lawrence Ventor. Unbelievably impressive season. They were so dominant for the majority of the season, winning in Qatar, getting second in Italy, second in Spa, fourth place in the 24-hour Le Mans, second in Sao Paulo, sixth place in the Lone Star Le Mans in Coda, winning Fuji, and then finishing in the points of Bahrain. But like, they finished in the points in every single race. Really flawless season. And Toyota Gazoo Racing and Ferrari, of course, gave them a serious challenge, but they were just so incredibly consistent that they ended up winning the WEC championship in the hypercar category by a considerable margin, 152 points compared to second place, which was 115. So congratulations to them. Also, congratulations to Manti Pure Racing for winning the LMGT3 category.
Nice. Okay. When does the season get back up and running for WEC next season?
So the first, the 2025 WEC season or WEC season kicks off in February.
Okay.
End of February.
I guess there's bigger breaks between the races, aren't there, usually? Because there's a handful of, obviously, races a season of, obviously, a lot longer races, 6 hours minimum.
Yeah, really. And a lot of drivers drive another series, so yeah, they space it out. So Qatar is end of February, followed by the 6 hours of Imola, which is like 2 months later, April, which is on 420, April 20th. Nice. Smoke weed every day. 6 hours of Spa in May, 20 hour of Le Mans mid-June. So it's like spaced out typically like once a month. While there are two races in the month of September, Lone Star Le Mans early September, 6 hour Fuji's at the end. But it's spaced out pretty well. And this is something we should talk about later in another episode. But I think WEC is such an incredible series and is very exciting and attracts some really, really talented drivers. I think FIA needs to do a better job with scheduling, like that some of these races don't overlap with Formula One races and Formula E races.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Maybe that's your goal over the winter break, is to convert me to a WEC watcher.
Because you're such a nerd about driving. I'm surprised you don't.
I mean, I enjoy it. I've driven some of the cars before on iRacing. I've done like an attempt of the 24 hour of Le Mans by myself. My car blew up in the pit lane about 6 hours in because I went to go get food quickly, and my live chat was like, oh, just press this button, turns the engine off, and it will save the engine so it doesn't blow up. So I come back to it, and it's not turning on, and I watch the replays, which went at one point when I was getting food.
Oh, no.
So it was very weird.
Bummer.
So I've done that. I think I've done Sebring, which I don't think is actually a part of the WEC program, racing at Sebring.
That's IMSA, I believe.
IMSA is, yeah. So I think that's yep. the one I took part in that. So I enjoy racing them, and then there's always a difference for me between racing them on a sim and getting into it. Formula One, I feel like I was always into, but I got into it more when I got the 2009 game on the Wii and then the 2010 game. And that's where I properly learned about the sport, by doing a driver career mode and being a driver in that series. I learned more about tyres, and that's how I feel like I learned a lot about the sport anyway, from tyres and rules and regulations from playing the game. Whereas all these other series, they don't have a game necessarily where there's like a career mode-esque for you to learn. I can go and do races and I can learn little bits of like, oh, we IndyCar, okay, you have primary and alternate tyres, and these ones are the better tyres, these ones are the worst, but these ones obviously last longer. And I can learn little bits like that. But in terms of the all-round aspects of like a season, and more in terms of rules and regulations across the season, I don't learn as much through racing it. So through WEC, it would take more of watching the actual sport than just driving.
That's fair, because I feel like I learned so much about tactics and formations in football or soccer playing FIFA.
Yeah.
Like actually setting the formations and being like, all right, I have these teams, I have these players with these kinds of skills. Like this is going to, and this is my playing style. Like this is the best formation with it. And then I would watch a match and I'd be able to see it so much more clearly. So I get what you're saying.
Yeah. So that's your, because it's reminding me that we've got motorsport winter coming up after Abu Dhabi, and then we're going to have 3 months of at least no F1. So there's a build-up to WEC for February to get into that. Formula E, of course, usually starts earlier in the year, right?
So they usually start in like January, but they're starting earlier this year. The for season 11, round one is in Sao Paulo in December.
Okay,
but this is something that I'm like very surprised that Formula E doesn't do. Like, why does Formula E not try to cram a bunch of their races in between the off season for Formula One?
It just depends, I guess, where you go in the world. Obviously, you can go to countries that are in their summer, so the Southern Hemisphere countries during the winter break, but there's not as many countries that obviously have circuits in those sort of areas. And you definitely can't go to Europe because all the tracks are going to be frozen. You're going to get no tire
You at least start the season in the Southern Hemisphere. Mm-hmm. And you like have four or five races that are happening when Formula One is, where nothing is happening and people are desperate to watch motorsport. Like what better way to build your fan base than offer a product when no one else is doing it?
Yeah, sometimes it's always better, isn't it, to go and do something that nobody else is doing, or be in a pool of your own, because you get all those viewers that obviously are waiting for something else. So it's not a bad idea. And it would massively help fill that horrible break in the winter where as soon as Abu Dhabi rolls, it's like, cool, I'm going to go touch grass now. You go touch grass for one day, and then you're like, right, so how many days is it till Formula One? Oh, that's depressing. That's quite a lot.
Yeah, for sure. All right, I've kept you on. I feel like you're pinching. You're about
it's time
to
for me to go back to bed, James, all right? I got up at 6:45, went to bed at 2 a.m. last night, getting home late. I get up for 7 a.m. podcast. I'm going back to bed. That is going to wrap up today's podcast. Make sure you're following on whatever audio platform you're currently listening to right now. Check out all the WTF1 socials for the latest news and gossip, especially over this two-week break that we're currently having in Formula One. And you'll see about other motorsports in there as well. Of course, check out James Coker's socials too, and my own. And we will see you next week for another podcast. Until then, have a good rest of your day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.